Good morning. He's gathered out this morning. It's good to be here again. Seems like it's been a little while since I was here, but it's good to be here and see the congregation gathered out. In our Sunday school, we went, talked about many things, I guess, but we never read the theme verse there, and I was thinking about that. Pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this. So, according to James, it is possible. Now, I don't know if you all have attained to it or not, but according to James, it's possible. And then he says this, to visit the fatherless and the widows in their affliction, and to keep himself unspotted from the world. And I think about that, unspotted, and is that even possible? I mean, we're surrounded by all these, the world pushes in so hard on us, and keep ourselves unspotted. Unspotted. I feel like that there's many, many areas that we could become spotted, and I believe that as time and years have moved and culture shifts, and that there's always new spots jumping up that we have to be there pushing back on. And I can't help but every time I see this verse, and I said it here before, maybe somebody's heard me say it, but every time I see this verse, I can't help but think that why did that one little app on the phone get named Spotify? And lots of Anabaptist people have it. And we just read in the word that says keep yourself unspotted from the world, and then we download Spotify apps. And anybody that has that app, if you've been on any amount of time, you realize that there's lots and 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 lots of dark spots there. And yet we just have it and say, well, would to God my desire would be that someday there would be some smart, and I said it's probably not going to fall on me, because God has given different levels of capabilities and understanding of technology, but certainly there's got to be somewhere someone can make an app that would be only good music. Wouldn't that be possible? If somebody had it in their desire and somebody saw the need for it, certainly there would be enough Anabaptist money that we could pour into it to make it work, and we could get rid of the filth. Maybe. Well, for message this morning, you turn to Matthew chapter 25. Matthew chapter 25. Jesus in John chapter 14 told his disciples, I got to prepare a place for you. If I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also. And of course, we're here today on this side of eternity, and Jesus has not come back yet for his church, has not come back yet for us as a people. We're here in this spotted world that we already talked about, and we're trying to remain unspotted. And depending on where you're at in life, what your age is, what your difficulties in life is, you probably have a strong desire or a stronger desire for the return of the Lord. And someday he's coming back. We know that, and my question this morning is, are you preparing for that return? Matthew chapter 25, we'll read starting verse 31. When the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and he's going to come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, and he shall sit upon the throne of his glory. And before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them, the one from the other, as a shepherd divideth the sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on his left. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit a kingdom prepared for you from the foundations of the world. There's a spot being prepared. It is prepared for his people. For I was a hunger, and ye gave me meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me in. Naked, and ye clothed me. I was sick, and ye visited me. I was in prison, and ye came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee in hunger, and fed thee, or thirsty, and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger and took thee in, or naked and clothed thee? Or when saw we thee sick or in prison and came unto thee? And the king shall answer and say unto them, verily, verily, I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these, my brethren, ye have done it unto me. Then shall he say also unto them on the left hand, depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. There's also a place being prepared for those. For I was hungry and hungered, and ye gave me no meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me not in, naked, and ye clothed me not, sick and in prison, and ye visited me not. Then shall they also answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee an hungered, or athirst, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not minister unto thee? Then shall he answer them, saying, Verily, verily, I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it not to one of the least of these, ye did it not to me. And these shall go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into life eternal. This morning, do you believe that time's coming? Do you believe that there's a time coming? That we're going to be called into account for how we treat the needs around us. According to this, it's coming. And I thought about this past week. Of course, Peter talks about, if you read 2 Peter 3, Peter talks about that there's many that scoff and say, it's never going to happen. It hasn't all for all these years. Where is the promise of this coming? All things begin, continue as they were from the beginning of creation. And then he says, but the Lord is not slack concerning his promise, but someday he will come back as a thief in the night when we aren't expecting it. And I was thinking about this past week. We had some of them, well, a little like today. It kind of gets cloudy and get kind of a cool breeze. And the days, it takes longer for the sun to come up. And you get up in the morning, it's dark. And in the evening, about 7:30, it starts to get dark. And the leaves are changing color on the trees. And we know what? Something's about to happen. We're about to hit winter. And if you're like me, I don't particularly like winter as well as some other seasons. And so I kind of, but you know it's coming. And all around the world, doesn't matter if you're a believer or unbeliever, you prepare for that. And I mean, you just see it. You see it happening. People, I mean, the coats go in the hardware stores. And I talked to a gentleman, an excavator friend of mine, and he told me, I'm headed to the Carhartt store. It's where men like to get better than ladies, I believe. But headed to Carhartt store, he's going to buy some warm garb. Why is he getting that? I mean, it didn't get cold yet. But he believes that winter's coming. And of course, I have this building that I built painfully, and I wanted to get some insulation in it, and it didn't really matter for the last 6 months that it wasn't insulated, but as I came into this week, I thought, you know, if I'm going to insulate this shop, I should get some insulation and start blowing it because it's going to get cold, and so, we prepare, right? You know, I prepare. Sherman talks about in the garage door business that he always gets really busy this time of the year, and I called him too because I need some garage doors on my building too, and it gets busy because everyone says winter's coming and we got to be prepared for this next season. And why do we know it's going to come? Well, God says it's going to come. He said after the flood, he said, seed time and harvest, summer and winter, day and night shall not cease. As long as the earth remains, then we just believe it. But we've seen it again and again and again. We've seen it. And so whether you're a believer or an unbeliever, you'd be foolish to sit back in your short-sleeved shirts and say, well, it's never going to get cold. It's never going to get cold. Well, where we live, in there is areas in the world where the season's temperature doesn't change as much, but still they understand that there's a wet season and a dry season, and these things come, and they can predict it. They don't know exactly, but they know in a certain time of the year it's going to happen, and that's what we do in our seasons. We understand this is something that's going to happen. And as we read here in Matthew chapter 25, I'm going to suggest to you this morning that it's like coming into winter, okay? It's sure, it's going to happen. God says it's going to happen. Jesus said it's going to happen, and this is what's going to happen. And we have, leading up to this, we have the whole chapter of chapter 24 and chapter 25, where we have Jesus pointing to his disciples and saying, this is some things that you can see is going to happen before this next season comes. And I believe we're closer than ever in that era. And my question is this morning, whenever we hit winter, whenever we are actually called and the judge, and I don't have a whiteboard here. I was going to do some drawing on here this morning, but it might have been distracting anyway. But when the king sits in his throne and he pulls all these people in, it says in verse 25, in chapter 25, it says that all nations, all people, he's going to bring in here, and he's going to separate. I'm going to get to that a little bit later. But first of all, he explained there was a time coming, and we see that in chapter 24, where this disciples, and I find this interesting, you know, the disciples were just, they were men like you and me, and they were following Jesus, and they didn't totally understand who Jesus was. And maybe these men were builders, I don't know. I'm intrigued by nice architect work, by structures. And these men come out of the temple there with Jesus, and they said, take a look at this building. Isn't this neat? I mean, these fancy stones and this nice building all built up. And I don't know if, why they pointed out to Jesus, but the first time they were with Jesus, when this is particular instance or not, but for some reason they pointed this out to Jesus. Check this out. And I kind of feel bad for the disciples, because Jesus just looked at them and said in verse 2, see you know all these things, verily I say unto you, there shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. And it's just like he took the wind out of their sails. Like, check this out. And then Jesus says, well, time's coming when this is all going to be brought to nothing. And of course, that bothered these men. It would bother me if I was excited about something and one of my good friends just looked at me and says, that's, it's all getting ready to get blown up. I would say, well, next time we get together, well, how do you know? What's the signs of this? And that's what these men did. They sat down here with Jesus in verse 3 and says, what's the signs of this? What's the signs of this? How do we know when this is going to happen? What can you tell us more? And I just have a few points here at this outstart on things that Jesus pointed out. Number one, Jesus said that what they were experiencing now was going to change. And I'm going to just say that's the same for us today, and that as we sit here in this nice, peaceful little country church in Keymar, Maryland, and it's pretty relaxing, it's pretty easy, and it's what we like to do, and there's no really interruptions to our services. They just happen and happen and happen. But someday that's going to change. And Jesus says that these things are going to change, and he says some of the things change you're going to see, and that is that there's going to be deception. We have that spelled out in verse 4. Take heed that no man deceive you. We have it in verse 5. For many shall come in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and shall deceive many. And I don't know that we have a lot of people today coming and saying, I am the Christ, but we do have a lot of deception going on. We have a lot of people trying to build on false doctrine, trying to hold things up that's not supposed to be held up. We have in verse 11, and many false prophets shall arise and deceive many. And we see much, there is a lot of people that's being deceived. And people are saying, what is truth? How do I know even what to believe? Meet a lot of people. Then they say, well, you know, I don't know. I'm confused. And I recently met a man, and he says, the more I search for answers on certain subjects, the more confused I get. Well, that is what knowledge is doing. Knowledge outside of the Word of God will only bring confusion. You'll get more and more knowledge, but it doesn't bring more and more wisdom. It brings confusion. And then the second thing I see here, and that is that he that remains faithful till the end will be saved. And we find that down here in verse 13, that he that shall endure. And I kind of have this endurance. When you see that word endure, I think of something that's just tough. But if you just keep pressing And I had a little incident of that, of course, earlier this year. And when you're laying there beat up and you just feel like you can't go, you just wish it would just quit. You just feel like quitting. And yet, if you endure, and that's what I did, I just endured. I kept enduring, and I said, even though it hurts, I'm still going to go. And after a bit, I can walk and I don't limp. And I feel pretty, I'm blessed for the healing that I've experienced, but it didn't come without some endurance. Well, you aren't going to make it to the end without endurance, is what Jesus is saying here. He that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved. And then we have verses 27 to 31 here, and that is, Jesus' return is sure. For as the lightning cometh out of the east and shineth even unto the west, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For wheresoever the carcass is, there will the eagles be gathered together. Immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens shall be shaken. And then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven, and then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he shall send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet, and they shall gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of the heaven to the other. So Jesus is coming. His return is sure. We know that what I read in Matthew chapter 25 is going to happen. It is a time that is coming. And then in verse 36, of course, nobody knows exactly when. A little bit like coming into winter. We don't know exactly when that first snow is going to fall. We don't know exactly when that first frost is going to happen. We don't know exactly when the first freeze. We have this little thing in our house that we have this chicken house down the pasture, and it's got this frost-free hydrant. Well, we have this nice benefit in the summertime that we have a hose running in the chickens with an automatic water, and so you just turn the water on, and it just stays on and automatically waters the chickens. It's wonderful convenience that's actually pretty old. But if you don't shut the water off the night it freezes, you will break that hydrant. And we've broken that hydrant probably two times because we think it's not going to get cold yet, and here that's the night it drops to 20 degrees, and the spigot's left on, and it freezes solid and splits the top, and it makes the parent frustrated and the boys frustrated, and we should have watched the weather closer. We don't know exactly when that day is. I can't say you have to shut it off on October the 1st, because from there on out it's going to freeze. No, we haven't shut it off yet. We had one morning, it was 31, and I was a little worried, but it wasn't that cold. So we just, that's the way the return of the Lord is. You don't know exactly when it's going to happen, but it's going to happen, and that's what Jesus is saying here. We have this in verse 36, but of the day and hour knoweth no man. We have it in verse 42. Watch therefore, for ye know not what hour your Lord doth come. We have it in verse 44. Therefore be ye also ready, for such an hour as ye think not the Son of Man cometh. Verse 50. And the Lord of that servant shall come in a day when he looketh not for him, and in an hour that he is not aware of. And then in 25, verse 13, he has, for watch therefore, for ye know not neither the day nor the hour when the Son of Man cometh. So there's no way we can come down to exactly this is when the Lord's going to come. We don't know. We just need to live in readiness. And then the fifth thing I have here, and that is that when the Lord returns, there's going to be those who are prepared for his return and those who are not. And we have that here in the first part of chapter 25. We have the wise and the foolish virgins. We have the wise that had the extra oil, and we know they were waiting there. And years ago, actually, I was at a wedding where they played this out. It was kind of neat, because I always wondered exactly how the story was, but how it was in this day and age. And Jesus laid it out. I was at this wedding where they actually did that. They had some people there waiting with the little lamps burning, because they weren't exactly sure when the bridegroom was going to come. And they showed how that in that culture, that's the way it was. The bridegroom would go home to get a house and stuff in order, and they were never quite sure when he was going to come back. But that's kind of what Jesus is teaching here. And whenever the bridegroom came, of course, there was those that prepared. They had things in order. They had knew that the bridegroom was going to come, and they said, we're going to do whatever it takes to be prepared for his return. Then there was others who said, this should do it. And then he delayed his coming, and they ran out of oil, and they ran out of, maybe you say ran out of steam, you know, that they maybe they were, you know, we read here in chapter 25 at the start about those who took care of the needs about them, and those who didn't care. Maybe they did for a while, then he just ran out of steam and said, you know. And about that's when he came. And then, of course, the next little part here, verses 14 to, I believe, down to 30, we have the faithful stewards and the unfaithful stewards. And when you read that little account there, leading up to this end of this chapter, you have where Jesus basically points out that he as master has given everyone talents. Everyone here has talents. Everyone here has something they have that they can give and they can pour into the kingdom. And some people he has given many talents, and some people he's given maybe only one. But he wants us to use it. Every one of us, he wants us to use those talents in order to do something with them. And then that brings me to the part that I already read, and that is Jesus is coming back. I'd like to just take a few points out of this section. Preparation for when the Lord comes back. What can we learn from these couple of verses? So first of all people. All people, when the king comes back and says, when the Son of Man shall come in his glory and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory, and before him shall be gathered all nations, all people, every person in this building, every person in this community, every person in this country is going to be called into the judgment. All your neighbors, all the people you've ever met, the beggars that are standing on the street corners. The people that are in the prison, the people that don't already have clothes to wear, the people on the other side of the world, all people is going to be gathered in. And the second thing we have here, there will be a division. So you picture the master sitting on his throne, the king sitting on his throne. As these people come up, he says, tell some to go to the right and some to go to the left, to the right, to the left, to the right, to the left. And I can picture these people, this foul, every person, every person, and there is a division. And it seems like in this little account that Jesus has here that as all these people come, that he does all the separation and there's not a lot of speaking. But once he gets these two separated on the right and on the left, then he says that he begins to speak. That's the third thing I have here, and that is the king will speak, and he will speak to the two groups. And he looks at those on his right, and he says, come, you blessed of my Father, and inherit the kingdom. And what a wonderful words. Can you imagine being part of the group and have those words spoken to you? And these men seem, well, he continues to speak, and then he says, because, this is why, for I was hungry, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, you took me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. And I was in prison, and you came unto me. And he says, this is what you did. And we have this group of people stand there, and they look at him and say, Lord, when did we do it? When did we do this for you? And the king shall answer, saying to them, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these, my brethren. And I picture Jesus there, and this kind of stood out to me, that we have the men on the right, we have the men on the left, the righteous and the wicked. And Jesus says to the, I picture him motioning with his hands, because that's the way we do. We're made in the image of God. I picture him motioning with his hand and says, as much as ye have done unto the least of one of these, my brethren. Now you can think about that. Jesus says, anytime you saw one of these in trouble, anytime you saw one of these in prison, anytime you saw one of these sick, anytime you saw one of these naked, anytime you saw one of these maybe fatherless, and you helped them, you helped me. And that was a reward for serving others. And then he has a reward listed for those who simply serve self. And he says unto them on the left hand, depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and he gave the same things, and I was all these things, and you never did it. And then these people say, well, Lord, we never saw you that way. We never knew that was you. We never saw you. So how do we prepare for this meeting? Point number one. First of all, we must understand every individual was created by God. It doesn't matter what color they are. It doesn't matter what position they find themselves in. Every individual out there, every individual in Keymore, Maryland, every individual in Chambersburg, Pennsylvania, every individual in Winchester, Virginia, every individual in the whole face of the world was created by God. They were. And Jesus in these verses is saying, I create every one of these beings and I care about them. So it doesn't matter what individual your life touches. It doesn't matter what individual your life comes in contact with. We have some sort of responsibility to them because of who they are and because who created them. And I had to consider the fact that as parents, maybe to bring a little illustration, as parents we have children, okay? And we're here with our children. We take care of our children. We love our children. And we would do anything we can to take care of them. But I'm going to say, for instance, you are not around. Your child is at the babysitter's, wherever, and you're not around. And your child's there. And they have an issue. They have a problem. They hurt themselves, whatever it is. And whoever's in charge of them steps up there and helps them. And you know, reaches down, picks them up, gives them a bed to lay down in, puts a band-aid on or scratch, whatever it is, and takes care of them. And as parents, you hear about that as what happened, and you say, They did it to me. You see, it was my child, and here they were. Somebody was taking care of them because he's going to take care of themselves. And I believe that that's the way Jesus, when he looks down and sees all these people, and we have camps we put people in. Talk about that maybe a little bit later. But we have camps we put people in, and we decide some people are worth putting energy in and some people aren't. But every person was created by God. And he has a desire whenever we reach out and help one of those people, he has that feeling that they did it to me. Because that is somebody that I created. Which kind of brings me to my second point, that is, not only do we need to understand that every individual is created by God, and second thing is, we must care about the needs of others. And I think about that as we live in a land of plenty, and we talk about this sometimes, and we do, we live in a land of plenty, and I know that whenever people rip up stakes out of the ground and move to another area and move to another community, and you can feel pretty poor because you're just like, I mean, how is this going to all work out? How is this going to pan out? Do we pay our bills? But the reality of it is this morning that we live in a land of plenty. If you're healthy this morning and you're able to meet your needs, now this is where it gets in a little bit of problems, because we have needs and we have wants, and sometimes in American society and the culture we find ourselves, we get these things probably confused, what we actually need and what we want. Maybe some people are better than myself at trying to, but it is something that we always have to consider. Is this simply a want, or is this a need? And I'm going to suggest this morning that in every church group, in every church, there's likely some people that have needs. And I know that as a people of God, we have responsibility. We didn't get to that in the last part of our Sunday school lesson. I just want to turn there because we have direct answers to how we deal with needs. And this was in the Old Testament, I know, but it talks about brethren that have needs. And I want to first of all think a little bit about that we must care about the needs of brethren in our churches. And I'm just going to say this because it's bothered me sometimes that our brotherhood assistance offerings, when they go conference-wide, that sometimes we still come up short. And I look in my own driveway, and I think maybe I'm not giving enough. But it wonders me whenever there's large medical bills, somebody's sick. Is that sick? People have all kinds of things that come up that they can't handle on their own because of different circumstances. And Where is the this thing of giving? We have people that have need, and I'm dressed. I actually got a shirt plus a suit coat on. I could probably do without the suit coat, so I could definitely say that was probably not a need this morning. But we have so many things, and can we divide and hand out and bless somebody? We need to see the needs of others and care about it. Jesus, in Deuteronomy, God said in Deuteronomy chapter 15. He says this, verse 7 and 8, if there be among you a poor man of one of thy brethren within any of thy gates in thy land which the Lord thy God giveth thee, and thou shalt not harden thine heart, nor shut thine hand from thy poor brother, but thou shalt open thy hand wide unto him, and shall surely lend him sufficient for his need in that which he wanteth. So God's saying here to his people, he said, if there's somebody that has an issue and has a need, help him out. That's your responsibility. And you go to Galatians for New Testament. Galatians 6, Paul wrote to the Galatians. In Galatians chapter 6, verse 10, as ye have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially them who are of the household of faith. And then Paul wrote to Timothy, and when Timothy was a young preacher, and he was telling him how to preach, and he says, charge them that are rich in this world. This is 1 Timothy 6, 17 and 19. Charge them that are rich in this world, they be not high-minded nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God, who giveth us richly all things to enjoy, that they do good, that they be rich in good works, ready to distribute, willing to communicate. Why? Laying up in store for themselves a good foundation against the time to come, that they may lay hold on eternal life. So this is the exact same teaching that Jesus taught, that we're supposed to help the needy. And in doing that, we are being the hands and feet of Jesus. Now, I know that in our culture, many times that riches is talked against, and I find it interesting because we can go to Matthew, and it says Matthew chapter 19, where we have that rich young ruler came to Jesus and said, what must I do to be saved? And there's two things that happen there. First of all, he said, well, what must I do to be saved? Well, in reality, there's nothing you can do to be saved. You must believe in Jesus to be saved. But second of all, when Jesus said to him, go sell all that you have and give to the poor and follow me, I believe Jesus had a desire that this man would follow him and understand more who Jesus was. And the man walked away sorrowful. And Jesus made the statement that it's just hard for rich men to enter into the kingdom of heaven. He didn't say it was impossible. He said it's hard. And see, the reason is that you see, Jesus said it was impossible because we read in these other verses that it's just hard because the more you have, the more you have to decide how you're going to use it in a wise way and who you're going to help and how you're going to bless people. And that's very, very important as we have opportunity, as God has blessed any one of us financially, we have a responsibility to what to do with that. This morning, I'm going to suggest that the amount of effort you put into helping your struggling brother, your struggling whoever it is going to affect your eternal destiny. Now, I did not say that if you give enough money, you'll go to heaven. I did not say that. But I did say that if you don't give money, you won't go there. If you don't give your time and energy to other people, you won't go there. That's what Jesus taught. He says if you don't do it, it will affect where you end up. That's what happened to these people on the left. They just obviously were only thinking about themselves. They did not take the time to reach out. Now, does this mean that being Jesus said unto one of these, the least of my brethren, he was motioning to the people on his right, does this mean that we only help our brother? Well, I have a question to ask you on that, and that is that, first of all, how do we know that the beggar that we try to help, the neighbor man that we try to help, the whoever it is that comes in that God brings into our life and we try to help, that's not a brother? How do we know that someday, because of our help and because of our assist, that whenever he comes to meet the judge, that he's going to end up on the brother's side as a result of that? And we don't have any way of knowing that. So my solution to that suggestion is that we need to help everyone, because possibly that's what it will take to make them a brother. And Jesus teaches in the Sermon on the Mount, Luke chapter 6, and you can turn there for a few verses. Jesus teaches about the other people, and he teaches to love them. Luke chapter 6, verses 27, but I say unto you which hear, love your enemies, do good to them that hate you, bless them that curse you, pray for them which despitefully use you, and unto him that smiteth you on the one cheek, offer also the other, and him that taketh away thy cloak, forbid not to take thy coat also. Give to every man that asketh of thee. It doesn't matter what the beggar is, where his background is, where he's coming from. Give to every man that asketh of thee, and of him that taketh away thy goods, ask them not again. And as ye would that men should do to you, do ye also to them likewise. For if ye love them which love you, what thank have ye? For sinners also love those that love them. And if ye do good to them which do good to you, what thank have ye? For sinners also do even the same. And if ye lend to them of whom ye hope to receive, what thank have ye? For sinners also lend to sinners to receive as much again. But love your enemies, and do good, and lend, hoping for nothing again. And your reward shall be great, and ye shall be the children of the highest. For he is kind unto the unthankful and to the evil. Be therefore merciful, as your Father also is merciful. Judge not, and ye shall not be judged. Condemn not, and ye shall not be condemned. Forgive, and ye shall be forgiven. Give, and it shall be given unto you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, shall men give into your bosom. For with the same measure that ye meet withal, it shall be measured to you again. So here we have the basis that Jesus says, give, and we don't have to decide. And I've for a long time, until actually recently, it's a bad on my part, but I felt compelled when I saw beggars to try to decide whether I should give to them or not, because what will they do with it? And I hear people tell me that there's many, many homeless that choose to be homeless. And when you give them something, it may just enable their addiction. And maybe it does. And I think that possibly I did too much analyzation, and so I drove past many, many, many of those people, to my shame today. Until somebody recently told me, was preaching at Winchester, and he said this. And he said, we're not responsible for what they do with what we give them. We're simply responsible to show an act of kindness, and it goes with them what happens to it. And that registered with me. Now when I see somebody that's needy, I don't have to try to decide whether I should or I should. I think, well, what can I give them? I think it's important that when somebody's holding a sign and saying they want money for whatever, that possibly do the whatever versus the money. I still think that's in order. You can give them something. But is it possible whenever we get to judgment that one of those would be awful to get the judgment and end up on the left-hand side and you saw faces of somebody that was in need on the right-hand side and you knew you willingly just because they might use it wrong? So this morning, my question again is, are we preparing for that day? Are we preparing for that the return of the King, and to be called into account for what we're doing with what we have? And the third thing I see here, and that is that we must love all men. Jesus said, "Love your enemies, love the unloving." We live in a culture where it's where we're used to loving those that love us. I mean, you have friends and you like people that like you, and that's who you connect with, but Jesus says that to truly follow him, that we must somehow have a heart and a love for the unloving. And I try to decide how we can best develop that love, and I'm not sure. I think it's something that, well, Peter says you have to, in order to be ready for the end, it's going to take diligence. And so I'm going to say it's not going to just happen by accident. But it takes conscience and diligent effort. And I think it helps us when we think about, I know we live in a world where I just get tired of seeing all the ink. I mean, people ink from head to toe, and you just see ink, ink, ink everywhere you go. And it's such a part of our culture, and you can be distracted by it, and just like, this is so pitiful, and you have no love for those people. But inside of every one of those beings is a soul. Because God, when he created man in Genesis, it says, "And God, Lord God formed man out of dust of the ground. He breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. And man became a living soul." That's different than the animals, okay? Man became a living soul, and that soul is going to live forever. Forever. And if we can influence one person, somehow help them in their need in one way in order to keep them from hell. And I don't know, sometimes I think that maybe we would... We would have a more of, maybe I would, maybe I say personally, because maybe you all here have a desire to help all the needy. But maybe if I understood better the awfulness of hell and got a grip of that and understand what so many people are headed to. Think about that rich man of Lazarus, a story there where that rich man, he had pretty much in life what he wanted. He lived a pretty easy life, and he had this beggar that lay at the end of his lane, and that's a kind of a sobering story. And he drove past that man, obviously, and he lived his life, but at one point in time, they both died. And the rich man in his agony says, "Oh, if only I could have one drop." the horrors of hell, and there's people, many people that are going there, and these beggars that are standing beside the road, and the people that are seemingly hard to love. Perhaps we need to pray more often that God would give us a heart and desire to help those people. Because we never know, we just don't know how many people that sometimes we pour energy into people. We did that at Winchester. The man came there for quite some time, and now he went to live with his brother. He no longer comes. But men from church there poured some energy into him, picking him up, bringing him to church. We poured energy into him, getting him a place to stay, to live, and put time and energy into him. And you wonder, was it worth it? Well, we don't know. We don't know until eternity. We don't know what stepping stones that did for that man. And someday, maybe he will yet give his all to God. And when we get the judgment, he'll be on the right-hand side. Well, in conclusion, this morning, are you preparing for eternity like you prepare for winter? And like you prepare for the change of seasons, are you preparing for that day? And are you looking at the needs about us in everyday life? And are we there to help them? For I was hungry, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was prison, and you came unto me. And the king shall answer and say unto them, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as you have done it unto the least of these my brethren, you have done it unto me. And I thought of the words in Hebrews, let brotherly love continue. Be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares. Remember them that are in bonds as bound with them, and them which suffer adversity as being yourselves also in the body. Is that your testimony this morning? And are you willing to continue to prepare for the next season? Let's kneel for prayer.